Jeez. Okay. So what are we doing? Movie review.
We are doing, yes, our fourth letter red carpet reviews.
I introduced the last several, so now it's your turn.
How appropriate that I introduce one about which I have no information. I know the name. It is Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Correct.
And I know the book it is based on is, I believe, Scott Pilgrim's Precious Little Life.
Well, it's several books, and that was one of them.
So the movie spans all the books?
Yeah. Actually, there's 6 volumes, and I've forgotten the name of every single volume, except for Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. But, yes.
That Precious Little Life was one of them.
I'm almost certain that it is. And one day Wikipedia will tell me when it finally loads.
Because it had that spoiler. To be continued at the end, or the end and then a question mark or something.
Yeah.
And I just assumed that they'd left it open to continue the story via more books or go through more books.
Nope, no? That was a video game joke.
All right.
Because since the time last time you played video games, they have this thing called continues. Where when you lose, you can come back and play again.
I quit just about the time when they had those things called saves.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. But so the books are Scott Pilgrim's Precious Little Life was the first, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, Scott Pilgrim and the Infinite Sadness, Scott Pilgrim Gets It Together, Scott Pilgrim versus the Universe, and Scott Pilgrim's Finest Hour by Brian Lee O'Malley.
I can definitely see why they chose versus the World. The only other possible one would be Finest Hour.
Yeah, I could see versus the Universe is okay, but it's just versus the World, but bigger.
Yeah.
I hadn't realized that Scott Pilgrim in the Infinite Sadness would have been a really bad title, because Michael Cera was just in a movie. It was Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like that would have been a little bit of brand confusion at work. But yeah, so comic book movie, based on comics, pretty faithful adaptation. That was kind of interesting.
I will take your word for it.
It wasn't word for word like Sin City was, you know? But up until the twins show up, it's pretty much straight out of the book.
It's interesting. So much of it is about, well, alluding to video games, though.
Yeah.
They did that in the book?
Yeah.
Do you feel that they did that as effectively? Because
more...
Did they just copy the graphics or... Not copy. Never copy. But...
But like reference old school graphics and that,
yes,
kind of thing?
Reference. That's a good one.
Homage. Homage is a nice way to say copy.
I would say, homage is... I would go with reference would be the best one.
Yeah. No, they totally did. I've got... Well, yeah, actually I do have one. I let someone borrow the last volume. So I only have one in my place right now.
Didn't that just come out a few weeks ago, the last volume?
Beginning of July. Middle of July, because it was the week before San Diego.
So they would have... And the movie premiered at San Diego, didn't it?
Yes.
So they were really under the gun.
It was, O'Malley was actually drawing the 6th book while the movie was filming, and they were trading notes. Like, nothing was done at the point when both books were being finished up, or both objects, obviously, because if they're both being finished, you know, they're not done. But, like, he sent over what he was planning to do, like some loose ideas, and the movie guys sent over their ideas, so there's some interplay between the books and the movie, which is kind of interesting. But I'm flipping through looking for video game stuff, but I forgot that this is the book where it gets super sad at the end. Yeah, no, in the books, it's, so here we go. On the left-hand page, Robot 01 has joined the party. And it's kind of digitized.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the video game references. And it was
clearly
actually...
Clearly after my time. Good lord.
Because they have the letters in video games?
I can't believe something that's after the time, my time, is that pixelated.
Or you know what? Actually, look at the back of the book, because that is also a video game reference.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And in the comic, it was clever. Like, it never really seemed forced or, you know, like, they were... Remember when this happened in video games, you know? Mm-hmm. It was just like, hey, this is stuff that I grew up on. Here it is in my book. You know, this is a personal book. And love it or leave it. But I thought the movie did a fantastic job, and possibly even better because you have motion and sound, you know?
Yes.
So, I mean, video games, it uses, what, you have to look, you have to listen, you have to touch, three senses.
And they have those very distinctive and annoyingly catchy little jingles.
Yeah. Actually, funny story, when they did, the first Scott Pilgrim trailer came out, and I was at work, it was like a Monday or Tuesday morning or something like that, mm-hmm. and everyone in the office was interested, so we all got around to listen to it, and we watched it, and the very end, there's the KO sound, mm-hmm. the one from the end of the movie, and I was like, I know this half a second long sound clip, I know which video game it's from, I remember when I was playing this video game. And it turns out that it's not actually from Street Fighter Alpha 3, but the guy's doing a dead-on impression of the sound effect from Street Fighter Alpha 3. And all the sound effects in the movie are the voice clips were Bill Hader, who's a pretty funny comedian.
All right.
Yeah. But yeah, it's, I don't know, like, so I grew up with video games, and, you know, my day job's video games, mm-hmm. and while there are times when
you
I absolutely...
You heard that correctly. His day job is video games. I expect threats to come in the fourth letter now. I would be disappointed if they didn't.
I'm pretty much drowning in video games on any given day, you know? But it's nice to see that kind of people from my generation had the same experience that I did growing up, and it's making its way into their work. Mm-hmm. Because, like, Vietnam, I guess, fiction was a big thing for a while. Like, responses to Vietnam and pop culture and entertainment. And yeah. Now it's like, video games and comic books are the thing. And it's kind of funny. But, yeah, so, what did you think of the movie as a complete newbie?
I thought it was great. Yeah. I loved it. It moved along really fast. It was kind of epic in its own way. And, every single person, I feel like, in that movie would kind of annoy me in real life, mm-hmm. but they were all spread out throughout the movie, so it was just, it was the perfect line where they're quirky or interesting mm-hmm. in moderation. It's like seasonings instead of being the focus. And the editor of the movie had, I think, perfect comic timing.
Oh, no, totally. I'm slowly learning, I guess, the language of movies, mm-hmm. if that makes any kind of sense. It doesn't make me sound like a pretentious jerk. And I thought the editing was fantastic. Like, it actually helped move the movie along instead of being, like, one scene, two scene, three scene.
Yeah.
Like, there were so many just cuts, like, in the middle of dialogue to the very next scene. And it gives the movie, like, a crazy pace.
And where no one's doing anything, but they use the faces and the split screen yeah. as a perfect way to build drama.
Yeah. This was very much a comic book movie. Mm-hmm. Like, even in the editing, you know, things happen between panels in comics. Here, it happens between, like, going to black and coming back from black, you know? Mm-hmm. But, like, I really liked this movie.
Yeah, this was... I would recommend it to pretty much anyone.
Yeah.
It was just fun, and it was great.
It was surprisingly clean, except for just a few, like, dirty jokes. There was, so when Scott says... You know, Ramona asks Scott, like, hey, how do you know a nice chow? Or something like that in the bar, and he's like, I've gotta pee on her. Like... That is totally a stealth R. Kelly joke that someone snuck in.
Oh.
Yeah. I spent so much of this movie just laughing.
Yes.
Like, it was just a really good time.
And everyone was laughing.
Yeah.
And
the entire theater was into it. But so...
Like, and the fights were fun and...
Surprisingly well, like, choreographed, too.
Yeah.
Because Michael Cera is... I mean, he's pretty awkward looking, but he acquitted himself well. Mm-hmm. And I liked that the fights weren't just jump cuts. There was actually, kind of like in Revenge of the Red Hood, you know, there were sequences of back mm-hmm. and forth and that kind of thing. And tons of special effects. like the movie was just littered with word, you know, like sound effects and CG and everything.
Yeah.
And it never
without them being intrusive.
Yeah. I think it worked with the movie's, I guess, internal logic.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like the one part where you're either with the movie or not was when Ramona's like, yeah, there's a subspace highway that I use that goes through your head all the time. And, like, if that makes you go, well, that's stupid, you know, then you're probably not going to like the movie. But once you're in, you're in. It's...
And I think it's because they were they used consistently.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of movies will just have... As a punctuation, I guess, whenever the phone rings, it goes ring,
yeah.
And an actual B-R-I-I-I-I-I-I-I-N-G goes across the screen.
Yeah.
And that happens every single time the phone rings. Like, it doesn't just happen, oh, aren't we being cute?
Yeah.
It's a comic book movie. They find different ways to do it, but it always happens when the phone rings.
Yeah.
So.
There was a lot like that I
enjoyed.
A little
consistency really helps.
The introduction boxes.
You don't
boxes.
Feel like it's just a trick.
When they introduce new characters, there's a little box that has, like, their name and then, like, a blurb and then their age.
Yeah.
That's straight out of the comic, too. And I really like that way of introducing people. Because it's, I mean, it's funny, you know? It just makes things more interesting than just going like, yeah, this is my friend Steven Stills. He's 22 years old and he's actually good. All of us suck. But yeah, so this was, each book's, what, like 200 pages? The sixth book is pretty thick. But so this is 1,200 pages of comic compressed into a 2-hour movie. So I think that's part of why the pace was so insane, is mm-hmm. that they had to cover a whole lot of ground. And it's interesting, like, how little they actually left out. Like, all the major scenes are in, but a lot of, like, the smaller stuff made it in, too. Which, like, I really feel like it's probably the most faithful comic book movie. Like, Sin City is by far the most accurate. Like, it's shot for shot. You know, mm-hmm. this is the comic book on the big screen. Congratulations. But that doesn't necessarily make for a good movie. Like, I enjoyed
it. That one it did, though.
Yeah, that one I was... Like, seeing the big fat kill on the big screen, like, the book that I've loved since I was a kid was, you know... It's like watching Jurassic Park for the first time.
Oh, I loved watching Jurassic Park for the first time.
It's like, oh my goodness, this is real, you know? But then they did it again with 300, and it suffered a lot, I think, because of its accuracy.
Yeah, and it had less of a... Well, 300 had less of a sense of humor about itself.
300 is very
Which is a shame, because it really needed it.
And what's funny is that actually the book has a few good jokes, and, like, for some reason the movie took, like, all the stuff that makes you like the book, like, in spite of it being, like, very much barrel-chested blah 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 stuff, you know, and it's like, well, we're gonna get rid of all that and replace it with slow motion.
Then fast motion.
Yeah. But this, it just felt like this is how you had to do a Scott Pilgrim movie. Like, I can't imagine any other way they would have done this. Because without the special effects, it'd just be, you know, like a generic Michael Cera movie. It'd be Juno or something. A little funnier than Juno, I would hope.
I liked Juno.
It's when she had the hamburger phone and... What did she say? Hello, Jello or something?
Yes, it was.
Like, I instantly gave up. Like, I just realized this movie's not going to be for me. It's all right, you know. But... Yeah, like, this really big blockbuster take on a book that's pretty much just about, like, getting over the fact that your new girlfriend had ex-boyfriends. Kind of works. So, was the metaphor, like, of the story, was that clear to you as someone who hasn't read the books?
That he was the one who actually needed to grow up?
It's that, and that, like, whenever you're dating someone, you kind of have to learn to live with their past as well as yours.
Yeah. To be honest, the one part where I a little bit rolled up my eyes at the movie was the part where he gets angry, they have a fight.
Yeah.
Because I felt like both parts of it were a little contrived. Like, I don't feel like she... I feel like she I understand that you have a past and the whole fighting the exes is a metaphor, but he was getting beat to hell all the time. So for her to be just like, oh, you're being such a jerk about this.
Yeah.
Not so much. And for him, the fights were just so fun and silly that I didn't get the feeling like he would be angry, or maybe Michael Cera just doesn't really pour on the smolder all that well. So that was the one part where I was just like, okay, I get it, it's a movie, they have to have this lowest point. But other than that, movies would be so much better with no conflict, David.
I see what you mean, that makes a lot of sense.
It would only just be people holding hands and skipping through fields all day.
I don't remember if that scene in the bar, it's after he fights Ramona's ex-girlfriend, who is a Texan ninja, I think. And I don't think that, I don't remember if that was in the book, but the big conflict in the book is that at the end of book five, Ramona just like leaves. Like, they're having a good time and she's like, listen, I have to go, this, you know, this isn't working for me. And like the entire beginning of book six is like depressed Scott. And all, he just sits on his couch and he gets actually, he was living with Ramona for a while and he's always getting himself locked out of the house and she has to let him back in, but she's gone, so he can't get back in, so he has to find a new place. And so, like, even in his depression, you know, it's kind of funny. But I thought that that conflict was much more believable than, like, the miniature one in the book.
Yeah.
Just because it was, like, she finally got something that she wanted, and it made her kind of uncomfortable because, you know, like, sometimes nice things make you uncomfortable. So she seriously just goes to the, went to the woods at her dad's house and hung out for a while. But she did this by disappearing off the bed, like, in front of his eyes, which was kind of funny. And, yeah, actually, I flipped right to the scene. And so, it, you know, it just fades to hard white. But, man, yeah, like, I am really impressed just with the movie. And, like, I'm actually kind of really happy for Brian Lee O'Malley as well. Because it was 2004, I think, when he did the first Scott Pilgrim. And it was just this tiny book that he just tossed out one day. Well, toss out, it's unfair, it's obviously a whole lot of work, you know. But it was like his little labor of love, and it took off, and now he's got like a video game, he's got a cartoon on Adult Swim, he's got a movie.
So wasn't it, video game is like Scott Pilgrim, the comic, the movie, the game?
No, it's something? Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the game. And yeah, it's got the colon for the game. But it's, you know, at the very end of the movie when the little sprite shows up and punches the VN, that's from the game. Like the little Scott guy. And it's just like an old school game. It's totally in keeping with like the Scott Pilgrim, I guess, style. And like, it's nice to see an indie success, you know?
Yeah.
Because I mean, like, you know, Geoff Johns, Grant Morrison, raking in the cash, writing Batman and Superman. But, you know, this is like all this one guy's, you know, I guess, thoughts.
Yeah. And it's, I imagine it's kind of, you see it when it's just another book and you're like, oh, well, this is a really good book. I hope they have another one. And then there's another one, and there's another one.
And they get better and better.
And bigger and bigger. Yeah. And then there's a movie and they don't screw it up, which is key.
Like, it's like there are several thousand dominoes set up and somehow, you know, it was perfect. And I hope that, you know, like, the box office doesn't really matter. Like, I hope that it does well despite that.
Brian Lee O'Malley is like, shut up, brother.
Yeah. Like, for him, it matters a lot. But, like, I actually hope that it does really well at the box office, because that's, like, it's like the final I told you so on a big stack of I told you so's. Like, I told you you should have liked this book. Now look at you. Now you're not cool anymore watching it on the second week. Yeah,
you could have done that to me. All you had to do was wait a week.
Oh, yeah. But if you liked the movie,
you
it would have been
you stole your
fun.
Own victory.
I'm very good at snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. Yeah, it was 2004. I was, like, just kind of getting into the comics internet and reading, you know, reviews and whatnot. And I think Warren Ellis, I was a big Warren Ellis fan at the time, so I, like, read his email mailing list and his website, and I don't think he had a forum then, but totally, like, just following this guy around the internet. And he was like, hey, this is a good book. You should be paying attention to this. And so, like, I did, and it paid off big. Because it's, I don't want to say that I love the series, you know? Not like I love some comics, but, it, like, I really like it. If that doesn't sound like damning with faint praise or something like that. It's just, it's really consistent, it's really good, you know? It's kind of like comfort food, I guess.
Or Tiny Titans.
Yeah, or Tiny Titans, which
just, like, I know whenever I read this, I'm going to feel happier at the end of it.
And actually, I didn't buy book 5 when it came out. It came out last year. I bought it at the same time I bought book 6 and just killed them both, like, while I was in San Diego. Because, like, I knew that, like, when I got around to it, I would like it, but I don't necessarily have to get around to it right now. And then, like, there was the movie and the book 6, and I was like, well, I do have to get around to it right now. But, yeah. So, did the movie make you want to read the books, or is it separate for you?
Meh.
Yeah. It's, the movie pretty much ruins, like, all the books, so there'd be very few surprises. The twins were completely different. The Japanese twins at the end, they were inventor-type guys instead of, like, being noise musicians, which I thought was a really interesting change.
Well, I can see how it worked with his Battle of the Bands thing. Yeah, the entire movie really fit together really well.
Yeah, the Battle of the Bands thing is entirely from the movie, I think.
You know, so much of it, it could have been one of those annoying high school movies where suddenly everything comes together at the prom.
Yeah.
You're like, did you attend the same prom I did? Because our prom was just a party that we all went to.
Crying and yelling.
You know, there wasn't finals and then the prom. There wasn't, like, electing a prom queen in the ensuing drama.
Yeah.
It was just a party, so why the prom?
Yeah.
But, and this one did kind of have this, everything will come together at this last huge thing that we've all planned.
Yeah.
But it actually worked. There was a reason for it, not just, well, I guess that'll, I don't know any other way to do this.
It's like, it's, we got 20 minutes left. All right, there's going to be a party, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah,
and that girl over there, cut her hair and take her glasses off, and then she'll be pretty for it.
Jeez. Yeah, I was, like, plotting, writing, dialogue, all of it was kind of on point. There was, I like how it was basically a musical.
It was.
I mean, like, every 15 minutes or so, like clockwork,
there's a song.
There's either, like, someone on stage or there's someone singing a song.
It's a little like West Side Story.
Oh,
where they fought to music. Except not set in America.
Oh, yeah, Toronto is not America.
I want to be in Canada. Doesn't scan as well.
No, not at all. But that was the other thing I kind of like about it, is that, like, every romance movie is set in, like, some big city. You know, there's New York, Seattle, pray for Sleepless. But, like, Toronto is still kind of a weird setting for something like that, even though
Which is funny, because don't they film?
Yeah, they film basically everything. It's like Toronto and Prague. That's where you go to make movies.
Where, like, the San Francisco romance, and we're watching it like, that is really flat for San Francisco.
There was, yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like I should think about the movie for a couple of days, because I liked it so much that, like, now I need to figure out what I didn't like, because I'm not coming up with anything. There wasn't enough Aubrey Plaza. That's the problem with the movie. And she played Julie Powers, who is kind of a, she's a jerk.
Yeah.
That's a nice way to put it. The cast was really impressive.
Yeah. And his sister was fun.
Yeah.
Wondering, does it pass the Bechdel test?
Yes, because his her sister talks to. Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to go back and look.
I would go with it still kind of goes with the spirit of it, because mm-hmm. there are tons of girls and they don't all think about him.
Oh, you know what?
Or if they do, they think he's kind of a jerk and wish he would go away and stop ruining their lives.
Knives talks to Envy, who ignores her, and Julie Powers talks to Envy, who is like, stop talking to me. And I think that counts. Yeah, there was... So the vegan, he was Superman. That was Brandon Routh.
Oh, that was!
Yeah. And
I like Brandon Routh. I thought he was good as Superman.
I think he makes a good Superman. He just had a raw script.
And he was young.
Yeah. It's like, I've been in space for 9 years.
Yes. Like, been at a space spa.
But yeah, Chris Evans
took
was
the
fantastic.
Biggest beating anyone ever took for not being Christopher Reeve.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was good in this one too.
Chris Evans has a habit of being like the bright spot in bad movies. But like here, he was just another bright spot amongst bright spots, which was really nice. And the voice he was doing was like, it was almost like the Batman voice that Christian Bale does, but funny on purpose.
It was. And it was that 30 Rock thing where the tough guys settle everything with a talking like this contest.
Yeah. I think that, like, I was sold on Chris Evans when he steps out of his trailer and the Universal theme is playing. And he pops his neck to the, like, the dun-dun sound. It's a self-aware movie in a way that I like a lot. Like, I'm a sucker for stuff that breaks the fourth wall. Like, I love Animal Man. I thought that, like, Flex Mentallo was fantastic. And, like, this did a really good job of emulating that sort of thing. But the surprise of the movie for me was Thomas Jane as the vegan police. Because, like, this guy is insane. He played the Punisher, which, you know, was kind of cool. And somehow he parlayed that into, like, just being in and around the comic industry. Mm-hmm. So he presents at the Eisners. He shows up, like, randomly at conventions and hangs out. And he strikes me as a guy who just, he's out there, like, just having fun doing whatever he wants.
Wasn't he the guy who was supposed to, like, come to comics conventions dressed as the Joker?
I don't know, but I could definitely see him doing that.
Otherwise people would be like, oh, you're Thomas Jane? And...
No, that wasn't him. That was... Who did that? Jen from Lost did that at one point with, like, the V for Vendetta mask.
Okay, never mind then.
Yeah, but he shows up in this and he's just, like, this stupid cop.
Yes.
And clearly just, like, you know, this sounds hilarious. Of course I'll do it. And it's not like when Samuel L. Jackson does it and you get snakes on a plane, you know? You actually get something really funny in the middle of a funny movie. I'm trying to think of which...
That was another scene of where I think either the editing or the direction was great, because the vegan cops come in and they have this huge scene where they're like tough guys, and then the evil ex is defeated.
Yeah.
And then in most movies you would forget about them. They would just be like making a stealthy exit.
Yeah.
Because you'd be like, okay, you served your purpose. Shuffle them off screen.
Exit stage left, even.
Yes. And this one, they get that one last... They count on you forgetting because you're used to movies where they just quietly
serve
move them off.
Yeah.
And they have that one last comedic sting, and then they go, which is really nice.
The high five heard around the world, as far as I'm concerned. And even that fight, like, speaking of, like, kind of the way the comedy works, is that he knocks Scott Pilgrim through, like, 8 walls. And you see him floating in the hole in the wall, and then the camera shifts to the left, and he comes through the door.
Yeah.
And it's just like, why didn't he fly? But this was funnier. Like,
yes.
And it didn't break the movie. Like, it didn't break your suspension of disbelief. You just go, oh, it's funny because it kind of plays with, like, what you expected.
And also, it's like this... You know how they have unnecessary displays of power?
Yeah.
For most superhero movies?
Especially in comics. Like,
I
Superman
picked up
with
a bus
eyes.
And I threw it at him. You know?
Yeah.
Like, if you can pick up a bus, can't you just pick him up? And No, but that's cooler. And it is, like, cooler to be, like, right there and you see them. And then you hear the door and you look and they're coming through the door.
Yeah. There was... So, how big of a jerk was Scott in this? Like, what did you think?
more... I don't think he was that much of a jerk. Mm-hmm. I think he was more just the guy who takes the path of least resistance.
That's a really good way to put it.
And until he's literally, like, pulled. And just a little thoughtless.
Yeah.
Like, I know I'm going to have to do it. I know I'm going to have to do it. I know I'm going to have to do it.
Maybe I can get away with it.
Yes. Or, like, I know I have to do it, and then... But right now really sucks. Mm-hmm. And then when it's out of sight, you can just forget about it for a while until, clang, suddenly you're right there again, and it's even worse, and you're going to have to... And it's really going to suck this time, and then...
That's pretty much dead on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I felt like that enough that I have some sympathy for him. You think...
Maybe it'll go away if I stop thinking about it.
Not right now. Not right now. I have plenty of time. I have plenty of time. Oh, crap.
Book six was pretty much like the book where he finally gets it together and is like, wow, I've been kind of a jerk. And there's this extended flashback sequence where it shows all the ways that he's been a jerk. And it finally shows like what happened when he dated Kim Pine in high school, which is pretty much she was dating someone, and I think that he beat the guy up, and then they started dating. And it wasn't like... The way he always told the story, he was rescuing her from this guy, but no, he just beat the guy up. Like, he was just a jerk. And he fights Nega Scott from the movie. And well, in the movie, it was like a really funny punchline. Mm-hmm. In the book, it was actually like, you know, confronting your fears, and, you know, like the Luke Skywalker and the Swamp Thing. And, yeah, it's pretty much just about how Scott's like... He finally becomes an adult at the end of the book. And, like, it was a really long journey, judging by all the stuff that he got up to. Envy Adams ended up being different because she appears early in the series. And she, you know, it's a big deal, ex-girlfriend, vegan thing. And then she appears again in book six. She comes back to town after having left town after her boyfriend exploded into coins. Mm-hmm. And she's kind of... It's almost a Brian Lee O'Malley stand-in, to where, like, she's gotten really famous, really popular, now there's a lot of pressure. And mm-hmm. she's like, you know, what we had back then was really nice. It was before things got really crazy. And it's another weird way that, like, it's a really funny book about breakups, mm-hmm. and Brian Lee O'Malley actually put a lot of his personal experience in, and kind of sneaks it in between all the video game jokes and, mm-hmm. you know, coins. But yeah, where was I going with that?
I don't know.
Yeah, me either.
Well, I'll just make my point.
Yeah.
In so many movies, like, there's a trope, the manic pixie dream girl.
Yeah.
And she, Ramona, at the beginning, literally is that. A girl in his dream. And she kind of has the otherworldly feel to her. She doesn't have as many quirks, like, the manic pixie dream girl would be like, I'm going to a pie-eating contest.
And, yeah.
Yeah, you know. But, where it's just, she, you get her, and she solves all your problems, but she seems into you for no reason, which mm-hmm. kind of happens in the book, too.
Yeah.
But then, over the courses of the books, you realize, wow, she was a jerk, too.
Yeah.
This whole... Oh, I just have a series of really quirky exes, and at first she kind of looks awesome, and then she looks a little less awesome.
And she's and like, yeah, like, I love him.
Wow, you were really not nice to those people, and you kind of get that.
Yeah.
But not entirely yet. So that was good.
Yeah. It's like there's stuff to chew on.
Yeah.
And then in the book, the League of Seven Evil Exes, their origin story is slightly different. Mm-hmm. Basically, Ramona dumps Gideon. Mm-hmm. And Gideon just, like, goes to pieces. Like, he can't believe that someone's actually ignoring him. A little bit of that was in the movie. So he posts a drunken rant on Craigslist. And that's how he finds the other exes. And then they get together to hassle Scott. And I'm not sure which one I like better. Like, I kind of like when he's screaming about how it took 2 whole hours to get everyone's contact information. Man, yeah. I think that the first boyfriend, Matthew Patel, really kind of set the tone for the rest of the fights.
Yeah.
Because he was voguing pretty hard.
He really was.
And it's been forever since I read book one, so, like, I don't remember if that's from the book. I think the pirate thing is, but, like, it made you, like, think about it and go, like, okay, this isn't going to be a crazy beatdown movie. Mm-hmm. There's going to be fights, and there's going to be, like, funny breaks in the fights for, like, you know, like, spotlights and things like that. Knives Chow looked really good in the movie, too. Like, I'm glad they
kept her
part.
And she completely threw herself into it.
Yeah.
You know, she was just... She was too good for him at the beginning of the movie, and the other characters say that.
Yeah.
But she was also really pathetic.
She's 17.
Yeah. But I mean, in that way, where you're just like, you don't know any better, do you? And that is understandable, but that doesn't change the fact that you don't know any better, and it's obvious.
Yeah.
And then... through the book, she gets to the point where she is really cool by the end.
Yeah.
After several iterations of sad patheticness.
The thing with her at the window, I wanted to cry laughing. Like, that was just... The actress for that was fantastic.
Yeah.
It's... I want to say her really name's Ellen Wong.
It really worked all the way from the kind of cute high school girl to the... just sad, dumpy, to the, okay.
Like, I'm going to kill her.
Yeah. I'm kind of, and all the way through the end, where she's just like, wow, I did some stuff that was really silly, and but I'm better because of it.
Yeah. And I do like that she straight up tells Scott, besides, I'm too cool for you anyway. And she was one of my favorite characters in the book because... So we've talked about my ridiculous interests where it's like war comics and puns, you know. She had so many puns in the book that were just beautiful.
I feel like you would have been loving everything around 1943. Where they still had that slapstick.
Oh, yeah. There's like the Charlie war. Chaplin, Buster Keaton.
Yeah.
I love all those old movies.
And in the 50s, you would have been one of those hard-drinking guys, like, who wore the fedora all the way into the 70s, just being like, kids. It's not like it used to be, I tell you.
But they kept the best line from the book, which was, get ready to chow down. Like, that's what I like. Like, I don't know. It's completely... It's internally consistent. If you were reading the comic book of my life, like, there would be really a bunch of angry fans on the internet talking about how out of character this is for me.
Oh, what was that pun that she was at the end? Just like, you stole my something, now face my steel.
Oh, what was it? Because it rhymed with steel. It sounded like steel. I don't remember, but that was fantastic too.
Yes. All right. Okay, then.
Like, I'm hoping that on the DVD release, there's just an extended pun sequence. Where it's all the puns isolated and, you know, like, spotlit, you know.
All said by commentary. Chris Evans, yeah.
Even the... When Michael Cera says, you were a vegan, but now you'll be gone. And the guy's like, vegan? You know.
All right. Okay, so, Scott Pilgrim. Really good movie.
Yeah, go see it.
Awesome.
Also, you should buy the books. And
sure, what the hell.
And you should also buy the video game, which is out on PlayStation 3.
Would I enjoy it with my video game ancient history?
It is.
Does it have a dog that laughs at you?
No, but there are... It should. Like, I'm surprised it doesn't have that.
Next time.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for listening.
4 o'clock and I'm still rocking. 4 o'clock and I'm still rocking. 4 o'clock and I'm still rocking. No stopping, no stopping, no stopping, no stopping. 4 o'clock and I'm still rocking. 4 o'clock and I'm still rocking. 4 o'clock and I'm still rocking. No stopping, no stopping, no stopping, no stopping.